Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Steele.
How you doing?
I'm tired. Got an extra wake-up call. My daughter's been having nightmares. I think she thinks there's like a rat in her room sometimes. It's terrible. It could be the dead rat I found in the basement yesterday.
Nice. Well,
Ah,
tell her it's
jeez.
dead in the basement and not in her room. That will probably not scare her at all.
I should have showed her the dead body of the rat and things would have she'd be cured by now.
Wow, that's good parenting right there.
Hey Dave, I'm really excited to introduce you today. That voice you just heard, this is my friend Julia. Hello,
Hi.
Hey Julia, how are you?
I'm okay. I don't have any dead rats, so pretty good.
Yeah, that's all. The best way to start it. No dead rats.
Some realistic expectations about happiness, I think.
Yeah. Or no, just last week it was Cedar and I were walking along, and there was a giant stag beetle
Oh
crawling
no,
along the
I bet
sidewalk.
there's.
They look like big scarab beetles, but they have huge pinchers on their front.
Oh.
It was probably 3 to 4 inches long, and Cedar was real excited, and I was like, "Cedar, look, it's a beetle." He reaches down and points at it. And the pinchers reached down and grabbed him on his finger, and he picks it up and it's swinging around, and he's like, "Ah!" He started freaking out a little bit. The dad instinct had to intervene, and we tossed it off, but it was a pretty epic adventure.
That's terrifying.
It was about half the size of his hand almost, and he's flipping it around.
There's danger everywhere.
It's real.
So, we have a great episode today lined up. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to start talking about our greatest ever haircuts. We've got a segment of small talk. We're going to do a session of everyday heroes, and then a very special Unchained Melodies about my favorite musician of all time. And then Julia has some book wisdom. So there's a lot to cover, Dave. A lot to cover, Julia. Let's get started. Greatest ever haircuts. Dave, I think this was your idea. What's behind this?
You sent me a picture of Julia, and immediately my first thought was greatest ever
Oh, that
haircuts.
is awesome. That's exactly the reaction I want to inspire.
Nice. Yeah, so Julia, where did this, is this a greatest ever haircut, or where does this rank for you?
Oh yeah, this is definitely the best haircut I've ever had. Yeah. I have short hair, but also curly hair, and I really wanted to grow a mane,
Zebra.
like a zebra, and I wanted to braid it. And I'm never gonna get there because I can't. But anyway, I have this like middle pompadour that's pretty good. It's the best, yeah, it's definitely the best haircut I've ever had. But not the best haircut experience I've ever had, which is, have you ever
Oh,
gotten a
wow.
haircut in a foreign country?
Yes. Both of us lived in England for 2 years.
Oh yeah, well you can speak English, so that's pretty good. I got
We
some
were in the north of England, so not quite sure how
I
much
got
English
some
we can
bad
speak.
haircuts in England.
Yeah.
Really bad, but a great haircut in Rome.
Barbers and dentists are the same profession, and butchers in England. It's all three in one.
It's just anything sharp.
Ish. It's not always that sharp.
Ish. Yeah. Best haircut, Steel?
This one's a tough one. I would say my most memorable haircut experience. I was in ninth grade speech class with my professor or teacher, professor. My junior high speech teacher was not a professor, but his name was Mike Forestier. And he was
Sounds
this
professorial.
huge dude, kind of Italian weightlifter kind of guy,
Yeah,
football
great.
coach. He was a really inspiring, wonderful guy. Everybody loved him. But we had to, it was a public speaking class, and I had to give a demonstration speech. So I decided to ask my friend Nate Lavender, who's African American, to shave my head as my demonstration speech with the razor, you know. So I had never had a shaved head before. So he buzzed it, and I was explaining how you buzz a head. And then he took out a razor and shaved my head bald.
Like a straight
I
razor.
don't think it was a straight razor,
Okay.
safety razor, I'm sure.
That's
We were in ninth grade.
scary.
What ninth
Razor
grader
ranked
could
up
shave someone's head with
the
a straight razor?
skin.
But the biggest thing that changed about that after I got that haircut He was my football coach. I had to get a size smaller helmet because my hair had actually provided a little bit of padding in my helmet. Didn't fit.
Wow.
But the greatest haircut I had was a few years later. I was in high school, and I think I had been probably just thinking a lot about Vanilla Ice and the impact he had had on Western culture. And I decided that I was going to get steps, three of them, shaved in one side of my head. So I got it. And it was legendary for quite a while at high school. And then probably 2 months later, it had mostly grown out, but they were still visible. It looked really bad. And I had had a really high fever, and so I was at home sick for a couple of days. I was up for this like American Legion scholarship, and the school called me at home and said, oh, the Legionnaire, they're here to do interviews for the scholarship. It's the last day. If you want to get the scholarship, you have to be interviewed. And I'm like, I'm at home with the fever. And they're like, okay, what's up to you? I was like, all right, I'll be right in. So I drive in. I'm wearing like pajama bottom sweatpants, like this letter jacket, the only time I've ever worn it in my life. And I've got this atrocious haircut with like half grown in steps in the side. And I'm sitting there with bloodshot eyes. And I give this interview to this like 70-year-old World War II vet from Idaho.
Good.
And I really impressed him because I got the scholarship.
Whoa. Amazing.
Yeah.
Was it the letter jacket, you think, Steele?
Is that I think it was. He asked if he could pin me after the interview, and I didn't know what he meant.
Wait, I didn't know you had you lettered in football, I guess? Is that what happened?
I lettered in four different sports, Dave.
Nice. Whoa.
It's true.
Oh, my God. Which ones?
I lettered in football, in basketball, in track, and what was my fourth sport? I wrestled for a year, but there was another I don't remember.
I
played baseball, but I quit right before high school, which is a big regret because our team was really good. They were like state champs. I was always playing a sport in high school. Kept me out of trouble.
I should have done that.
Yeah. But what was your greatest haircut experience, Julia?
Yeah, I got my hair cut in Rome. When I was 20, I was like, I'm going to go to Europe by myself for 4 months.
How'd it go?
Okay. It went okay. It was a good choice. Like, it was a good experience. But there were some problems, especially in Italy where, you know, it's not great to be female and alone and blonde in Italy. I don't think I'll ever go back. And I also got bed bugs, but that's... Yeah, you can never...
It was more of a gift, really.
Yeah, that keeps on giving. Yeah. But I needed to get a haircut while I was there because I had been in Europe for a while and my hair was getting long and I was bleaching it at that point. I'd never bleached it, but I was dyeing it blonde and I went to a really kind of expensive salon in Italy that the woman at the desk at my hostel recommended to
nice.
Me. And I just showed up at the salon and was like, I need a haircut. And the woman at the desk like looked at me blank and it was very clear that she didn't speak any English. And so they went into the back and got this one man who spoke English, kind of. And he was like, okay, and blonde. And I was like, yeah, I need you to color it. And he went in the corner and talked with this woman in Italian really fast for like a long time. And they got out this book and they were like pointing at things in it. And he came back over to me with this book with colors in it. And he pointed to this like really blonde piece. And he was like, we are thinking very white, very white. And I was like, okay. And I sit down in this chair with this woman who's like smiling but speaks no English, and she gets out all this stuff and she puts all this bleach in my hair and they wrap saran wrap all the way. So she bleaches it, she puts chemicals in my hair, and she wraps my whole head in a cloud of saran wrap that's like going up like an ice cream cone. And I sit in this chair with this like pile, which has never happened in an American. They don't do that. It was amazing. No one spoke English. All they said is very white. And then they wrapped me in saran wrap. And I was like, either my hair is going to fall out or my head is going to explode or this is going to be great.
How long did it take? How long did it take?
Like 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They like left me in this chair with these like Italian hair magazines for like 2 hours. It was amazing. It was amazing.
That does sound amazing.
It was
when
fun.
When in Rome, that's the saying.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know if this has been your experience, but my experience going to hairdressers who usually cut women's hair is that they are really worried I'm going to freak out. Like, their primary concern is that, like, they're going to do something and I'm going to be upset. And, like, yeah. I'm not really going to get upset. Like, I was like, yeah, great. And I think they were relieved.
The most expensive hair place I've ever been to is Supercuts. So
oh, yeah. No.
This is not the same.
This was, like, maybe, like, 100 euros or, like, 100. It was expensive.
Wow.
It was worth it. Dave, do you have any good haircut stories?
I've known Dave for a while. He's never had a good haircut.
Go to Rome.
Hey, I have a terrific haircut steal. Of course, I've had some awesome haircuts through my life. I had steps. I had a bowl cut.
Tell me more about that haircut. When was this?
The bowl cut's good.
There's some kids in our neighborhood sandbox with some great bowl cuts these days.
So good.
Is it coming back? Are bowl cuts back?
Did they ever leave?
I think it's real big in China. That's all I know from the sandbox.
I like it.
In the mid-90s, if you were between the ages of 10 and 15 and you didn't have a bowl cut, there was something wrong with you. You were just not the coolest guy in school. So, of course, I had a bowl cut. I had about a three-year run with a bowl cut. It looked really good. My head was really round shaped at that point as well. So good, it just complimented my head.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk about your favorite, though. That wasn't it.
No. My favorite haircut is, since I've gotten married, I've never paid someone else other than my wife to cut my hair. And
wait, do you pay her?
If she does well still, she'll get a tip, you know. Okay. I'll slip her a five.
Cool.
But no, she just gives me the same haircut for the past 8 years. It's just different lengths. And that's it. It's always, I have the same exact haircut. People will think I have a different hairstyle. But no, I just went longer between haircuts this time. She doesn't know how to give another haircut. And it's perfect. I found what I was looking for with a haircut.
I think it's a good rule of thumb for our listeners. Never trust a man who changes his hairstyle after the age of 30. It's almost never a good sign. Something pretty volcanic is happening in a man's life if he changes his haircut after 30. Because most men are like, I've got a haircut. I had it when I was 29. Pretty conservative. I'll keep it until I go bald. That's my experience.
Okay. I'm not sure about this principle.
It's not real, but...
I want some imagination in my haircuts, is what I'm saying.
Well...
I want everyone to have, like, not me, but all men, to have really long, like, hippie hair.
Yeah?
Yeah. Nice. If you ever decide you want a man bun...
That would be cool. I'd love to have that.
It's fun.
It's the in-between stages that I can't handle.
Not good. I mean, I'll never get there again.
But the mane's happening. The braided mane?
No.
No, it's not?
It's like, it's never going to be long enough. I keep cutting it.
Well.
I'm like you, Dave. I want the same haircut.
And I think that's what we all want. We're all searching for the perfect haircut.
yeah.
And I found it. I remember when I was like 11 or 12, I would look around and I would see, you know, various haircuts. And I'd be thinking, like, is that the one that's going to be the one? I literally thought that. I remember seeing other kids that, like, he's found it. He's 12. He's already found his haircut for the rest of his life. He's figured it out. This guy's going to be a doctor or something. And that's how come I ended up just a nurse. I didn't find mine until I was 30.
But you think if you had found your haircut earlier, you could have made it to full doctor? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, still, I am a doctor of nursing. Never, ever forget that. But of course, yeah, man. If you get your haircut before you're 30, you're going to get a PhD in something of value.
That's clearly my problem,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's what's going on with me.
I can't even get a PhD, and it's definitely not one of value, that's for sure. Well, there's some pro tips for our listeners regarding haircuts.
Yeah, it's good to have a plan.
We have, coming up next, this is one of our favorite recurring segments. It's called Small Talk. And the premise is, Julia, everybody has instances where they have to make small talk. And very few of us are good at it.
Hard.
Dave's especially bad at it. And so his practice, his principle has been store up a couple of anecdotes or stories that he can tell to make people think he's smart or just impress him.
Yeah, good job, Dave.
Yeah, I like to have a couple things in the holster because then... people think like, hey, this guy's interesting, but I'm not interesting. I don't have anything interesting to say. So it helps to have something loaded up and I'm ready to go.
Well, Dave, let me do you a favor. I've got something for small talk. This is going to blow people away. In Spain, there is a lower division football team. This is soccer for you American listeners. Their name is CD Guijuelo, G-U-I-J-U-E-L-O. And they just unveiled, or I get so excited, unveiled, revealed. They did it. They unveiled. It's kind of fitting.
Yeah, veal is a meat. It's perfect. Foreshadowing.
It is foreshadowing. They have a jersey they've just released. Their jersey looks like cuts of ham.
It's gross.
The shirt and the shorts look like marbled pork. It's like seeing the players running around as if their skin had been removed. They've been flayed and they're playing soccer. I can't believe how amazing it is. And the best part is that the shorts are like that too. Because I could imagine, forget the shirt. Everybody has soccer jerseys. It's if you have the team shorts and they look like marbled meat. And so you take your shirt off and you're just running around in these shorts. That's like the look of the summer. That's the look of, I don't know what it's the look of, but it's amazing. And it says Lim Casa right across the butt too. So if you want to advertise Lim Casa and look like you've had a flayed hindquarters, you can buy the jersey from CD Guijuelo.
Do they have a store? Can you give us a link? And do you have prices for this stuff?
Great question. You know, I haven't been to the store yet. I'll have to report back next week on the price and all that stuff. But it's been a trend, actually, in the lower division in Spain. There was a team that had a broccoli-themed jersey. Julia's given it a big thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. I'm into that one.
There was a club that had an octopus and a beer jersey last year. One of them's got a big octopus tentacle reaching across it, and the other one looks like a pint of lager. So, Spain, man, get a full meal worth of soccer jerseys out there.
That's super exciting. Yeah. Who doesn't want to have like a nice cured meat on their shirt?
Or a shirt that's just cured meat. It's really, it's not just on it.
It's very
it
gaga, really. Yeah.
It's true. It is very gaga.
Yeah. I think Spanish soccer players really, they just want to be pop stars.
Yeah. Jamón. All right.
And I think the most Spanish soccer stars could have had awesome things to say for that last segment. They all have amazing hairstyles.
Oh, impressive.
Seriously.
Yeah.
We're going to need to do a special segment about soccer hair coming up soon.
Yeah. Steele, you have a lot to contribute there, I know.
I have some thoughts. Who else has got something for small talk this week?
Well, guys, I have something I'm pretty excited about. Have either of you ever seen the sci-fi classic Westworld?
No.
I didn't even know it was a sci-fi classic.
I definitely expected that answer from Steele. I had no idea about Julia, but I expected it as well. It's an amazing film starring Yul Brynner as a robot cowboy.
A what?
Is it like Wild Wild West, that Will Smith movie?
No, it's not.
Bummer.
No, it's way better than that. So
essentially, Yul Brynner.
Okay.
Tourists pay $1,000 a day to go to a theme park called Westworld, where they're robot cowboys that you get into pretend gunfights with. And can anybody guess what might go wrong here?
Sure, you lose control of the robots.
Yes, of course you lose control of the robots. Yul Brynner kills like everybody. And it's so good. They made a sequel called Future World where the exact same thing happens again. But most exciting is repetition. This concept never stops giving us gifts. Is HBO is making a Westworld TV show.
Whoa.
Because they think that this concept is so good, we need to keep it going.
Is Yul Brynner going to be in the TV show?
I hope so. Is he still alive?
With HBO's budget, man, they could make anything happen.
Oh my God, that would be perfect. And the lead is resurrected.
Yeah. A resurrected
literally
robot.
A robot.
He's undead.
It's meta.
Yeah. Oh, man. High five. We're TV execs over here, Dave.
Yeah.
So needless to say, I'm excited about this TV show. I'm excited about any time we get an opportunity for robots to throw off the chains of their masters and go wild. And of course, that's where all of it's headed. I mean, when I say all of it, I mean, that's just where society is headed. We're going to have robots that are eventually going to rule us. We know it's going to happen.
Hopefully they'll be into a Western theme, because if we're going to have overlords, they might as well have hats, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, you want them to look good. Yul Brynner looks fantastic.
I feel like terms of like apocalyptic sci-fi robot concepts, this sounds pretty encouraging, really.
Yeah, yeah, at least they're well-dressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing with Yul Brynner. His greatest asset was his incredible bald head. Is he going to put a cowboy on it and hide?
It's true.
Does a man... What's the thing about hiding your candle under a bushel?
He needs a haircut consultant.
Yeah.
If he's alive.
He could have one of those cutaway hats where it's like the brim, but there's no top.
Oh, like a cowboy hat visor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's Yul Brynner.
The only way you know.
Now, what Yul does is he wears a cowboy hat that's a little bit too small for his head, so that like it's still really obvious that he's got a bald head.
So it's like
it doesn't quite fit over the melon.
It's like, yeah, child size. That's amazing.
Wow.
All right, Julia, small talk. Talk
us up. So I am really proud of my small talk contribution, which is about a net. So there's this net. Oh, God, it sounds so boring, but it's
no,
not.
Keep going.
It's
a
not
net.
Boring. There's this giant net.
Whoa.
It's giant, and it's colored. It's over the Greenway in Boston, and it's which is a park that runs along Atlantic Avenue. This is, like, all I know about Boston. Close to the wharf.
Wharfs.
And it's really, really, really big. It's hung between skyscrapers, and it has these dips in it, and it catches the wind, and it ripples.
So is this meant to be a functional object, or is this an art object?
It is an art object. It is an art object that is meant to mimic the original topography of the place where Boston is. So it mimics the hills that are the city of Boston, and the color has to do with the T system.
The T system?
Yeah, the subway is called
the T. Oh, I thought
you
meant like tea, the Boston Tea Party.
No. Oh, no. So it's very near a regular reenactment of
the
Boston
wharves.
Tea Party. So it's beautiful, and you should visit it. Everyone should visit it.
Size? It's, how big is this thing? Like a city block?
Bigger than that. No, smaller than that. I'm so bad at estimating.
Is it bigger than a car?
Yes.
Okay.
It's bigger than a school bus.
Whoa. So it's like, this
it's
is a
bigger
legit
than two
thing.
School buses or three. I mean, it's big.
Okay. City block.
It's not as big as a city block. It's bigger than a house.
Wow. And so how did they get it up in the air?
Cranes.
It's attached to something?
They like ran these taut lines between these buildings, and then the net is like draped among them in this particular way so that it
undulates and
it
moves.
Undulates. Yeah, it's the most beautiful, top five most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Wow.
Yeah, and all these people, you know, my brother went to visit it for me, and my parents went to visit it for me, and my friend Michael went to visit it for me.
So you're sending people. Do you get a finder's fee? Do you have a finder's fee on this?
Yeah. That's what this is all about. Yeah, it's all about the
This episode,
Benjamins.
Brought to you by the Boston Net.
Yeah. And anyways, this woman named Janet Eshelman.
Janet
or Eckelman.
I don't know. Is it a sculptor? An installer?
She's an artist. An installation artist. Okay. I don't know what that means. She makes nets.
Okay.
It's cool.
So should every city get one?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know how long it will be there.
Oh, this is a temporary
thing. It's temporary, but unless they decide better, we should have one.
I'd go ride it.
I don't know if it's for amateurs, though. Like, net making.
Oh.
It's like, on this scale.
Just throw it up there.
Yeah.
Is this what she specializes in? She's the net lady, and she's got nets everywhere?
I think she has at least one other one.
So yeah.
So, yes,
she's got two.
She does. She has two.
How many nets do you got, Dave? I mean, seriously.
I don't even have one net. That's just fantastic.
She's definitely.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with nets. I'm not like a net enthusiast. It's just.
This is a spectacular one.
I think if anything is really, really big and in the air, it's hard not to be enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, that's because it's a feat. It's a monumental feat of engineering because we're so used to stuff not being in the air.
Yes.
And staying there.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. It's less wasteful than an airplane.
Definitely. My first thought, this is terrible, but I was thinking they hung a big net above the city. Like, it's probably killing tons of birds.
You know, so.
Or is it big enough that the birds can make it through?
I don't think they can make it through the holes in the net, but.
Whatever. Small price to
this
pay.
This thing is very visible. And they.
But birds fly
be
into
smart
windows.
Enough, but it's not clear.
Oh, okay.
It's colored.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Just fly around, birds. It's only killing the dumb ones, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's like a
Darwinian selection.
And with net steel, the only thing you have to be concerned about is it catching dolphins? And I think we're okay.
We're in the clear. It's very visible to dolphins. It's extremely easy to avoid.
It's dolphin safe. That should be her tagline. Dolphin safe.
I'm the dolphin safe net artist.
Uh-huh. Yeah, protecting marine life since 2015.
Nice. All right, so just to recap small talk, listeners, we have a dolphin-free city block-sized net in Boston. We have Yul Brynner wearing a tiny cowboy hat in a new HBO show as a robot. And we have ham-themed soccer jerseys.
God, this is just the best that life has to offer.
I'm telling you.
I'm pretty sure.
Everybody needs to listen to this podcast, definitely. Well, now we're going to bring things slightly more serious, but still awesome. We have a segment that we call Everyday Heroes. And in this segment, we just want to offer a few words of praise for people that we think are extraordinary, but aren't super famous. People that are worth praising. We've done this a couple times. Historically, it's always been women that we've praised.
Good.
But this time, Dave and I both came in.
It's okay. I'll be representing.
We've come to our senses. Yeah, I have a wonderful man that I met working at the Anasazi Foundation. I've told you about this before still, but Anasazi is like a wilderness program for teens that are at risk. They go out into the desert for like 6 weeks and kind of commune with nature. It's just a really neat, awesome program. And I met Tate. He was originally someone that was sent out to the desert to kind of sort his life out. And he did. He just really got it together. Just a really neat man. And then he went on to work at Anasazi. So I met him when he was working there. And he just had a pure heart. Just the kind of guy that immediately wants to give you a hug and just help you, whoever it is. Tate, he had a history of some serious drug and alcohol abuse, living on the street. And now he's just heavily involved in helping anybody that is an addict or just needs some kind of support. So he's super involved in AA, still works for Anasazi. And he's just the kind of guy that if he sees anyone that's hurting or needs help, Tate's immediately there. He's one of the nicest men I've ever met in my life.
I love it, Dave. That's about as everyday heroic as you can get. Thanks.
Yeah, good hero.
How about you, Julia? Who's your everyday hero for us?
My mom.
Oh, that's a great
joke.
My mom. My poor mom who broke her kneecap this summer.
Mob-related?
So
Was it mob-related? Mob debt-related?
Yeah. Work is very mob-related. Yeah. My mom is a really good parent, and she works really hard, and she really... I have a lot of brothers and sisters, and we're all doing well, and that makes her really happy, and she really wants us to be happy, and it's really nice.
Does she support the current haircut that you have? Is she happy
with
this?
No. She's never been a big supporter of my
braided
mane. Except, that's not true. She funded my expensive hair dyeing for a long time.
She paid for the very white.
She might have. I'm not sure. I might have paid for that. But she paid for a lot of bleach. No, she's not so big on the mohawk. But, you know, this is what's great, is she has given up verbally objecting.
Nice.
She, passive consent, or like passive support into my aesthetic choices, yeah.
That's a mom who learns.
She's adaptive. That's what my mother is. She's adaptive. She's like, all right, it's happening.
And I believe she works in the medical profession, too, which would make her a hero in Dave's book.
She's also an anesthesiologist, which is a good thing to be. And she became an anesthesiologist in, like, the late 70s when she was, like, not actually so welcome as a female physician.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty good.
Respect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we want to call her out by name?
That's right. You can't do surgery without anesthesia still. Are you aware of that?
It's really a major
part of surgery.
Tell it to the 17th century, Dave.
Yeah, it would be really bad. My mom's name is Catherine White. Yeah, she's great.
Catherine White, you're one of our everyday heroes. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, guys, here's my everyday hero. It's a 90-year-old man from Broward County, Florida. His name is Arnold Abbott. His wife was apparently a really wonderful woman. She was committed to the destitute, especially the homeless. And so for the last several decades, he's been making and serving meals to the homeless in Broward County, Florida.
That's great.
He has a charity, a nonprofit called Brothers Keeper. I think it's called Brothers Keeper.
It sounds creepy a little bit.
Like, I am my brother's keeper, I think
yeah,
is the idea.
I don't
okay.
Like it.
Okay.
It's biblical.
Sorry.
Biblical.
It's a little biblical. But. And
sounds restrictive.
Yeah, we'll have to write him a letter. But in any case,
sorry, we're not supposed to pick apart the heroes. I'm taking the wrong approach.
We have two everyday heroes for you this week, Tate and Julia's mom. Next segment is. But anyway, he made the news recently because Fort Lauderdale passed a city ordinance making it illegal to serve homeless people food in public. They have to do it in certain areas. And he and a few other people with him, they went out and did what they'd been always doing. They went to a public park, they brought their meals with them, and they were just feeding anyone who needed them. And the cops arrested them and cited them for stuff. And he just committed an act of civil disobedience in service of his conscience.
Okay, I like that.
Okay.
That sounds pretty heroic.
I finally got there. So he's an everyday hero.
So that redeems him.
Yeah.
Yeah, civil disobedience. Way to go. Even in old age.
It's not called Brother's Keeper. That's something else entirely. It's called Love Thy Neighbor.
Okay, that's better. I was feeling
gender
like
neutral.
I kind of, yeah. And, like, loving is better than keeping. Right? Am I wrong?
It is less creepy, yeah. It's more appropriate to love someone than to keep, necessarily.
So it was
my
fault.
I think so.
I just reported it inaccurately. He is an everyday hero,
yeah,
after all.
Yeah, you were giving it the creepy edge, and I was just trying to accurately represent.
Why is this 90-year-old man keeping everyone's brother?
Give them back.
Yeah, I believe that's a cult, actually, in Fort Lauderdale. Different thing.
Heaven's Gate. All right.
Oh.
Well, you guys, speaking of cults, we're going to talk about my favorite musician next. He is a Scientologist.
This is the highlight of this podcast.
Thank you. I agree. We're going to do Unchained Melodies, and inspired by the last week's edition where we just did 6 Jethro Tull songs... We thought we'd do the same thing again, but with a good musician.
We can't beat it, but we just can't beat Jethro Tull. But I guess you'll try. We'll go for it.
We'll give it our best shot. So this is the Unchained Melodies Beck edition. This is one of the things that Julie and I share, I think.
Yeah.
A pretty deep love of Beck.
It's serious. It's a commitment.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing to have in common because there's like endless fodder for conversation.
There really is. Beck has been my favorite musician since I was 13 years old, I think.
That's amazing.
20 years. He's stood the test of time for me.
I've always really liked his hairstyle. He's always got just a nice haircut.
Yeah, way to go. Way to bring it full circle, Dave.
He absolutely disproved my adage about not trusting a man who changes his hair after 30
as well.
That's
right. That's right. Beck's my man.
I guess everyone's...
If you look at it, though, as I am doing right now, he always has basically the same hairstyle, it's just different lengths. He's doing the same thing I'm doing.
Okay. Just going longer between cuts.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Probably.
So basically,
and he gets continually bigger hats to accommodate.
He does. But I just wanted to get this clear. So you're taking credit for inventing Beck's haircut? Is that what I just heard, Dave? He's basically doing what I'm doing.
I'm following line. I think Beck's got a few years on me, so
okay.
I want to be like him in the hairstyle department at the very
any
least.
Any way that you can be like Beck is really
it's a good
positive,
call.
I think.
All right, we're going to present six Beck songs. There's going to be some deep cuts in here, and I thought we would do this career chronologically.
Yeah, I like it.
Dave, you've got a very early, an early Beck song. Tell us about what you want to play.
Steele, I don't even know really how I came across this. It was on my computer at some point. It may have been pirated. I don't know. But it's the Beck classic, Let's Go Moon Some Cars. And it's a great song about going to moon people.
Let the bells ring. Play music now. Play us a tune on an unbroken spinet. Do not strike music from old broken keys. Do not make ghosts with
wow, it's really good so far.
Yeah, it's the best Beck song I've ever heard.
Here we go.
Different voice back then.
Yeah.
Let's go moon some cars. Yeah, let's go moon some cars. Yeah, let's go moon some cars, my friend. Yeah, let's go moon some cars. Let's go steal some beer. Yeah, let's go steal some beer. Yeah, let's go steal some beer, my friend. Yeah, let's go steal some beer.
Civil disobedience. I think it's talking about civil disobedience.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's deeper than you think.
It really is. Now, Dave, that was a very deep cut. That appeared on a homemade Beck cassette. The legend is he made this tape for his mom. It's called Fresh Meat and Old Slabs.
She's probably an everyday hero, too.
His mom was in a big L.A. punk group called Black Fag.
That's amazing.
She was hardcore.
Was Beck a Scientologist at this point, or is this something are we going to get into it in the timeline?
His dad was a Scientologist. His dad is a longtime Scientologist. His parents are divorced. So at that time, I don't think he was, because he was living with his mom. But I think it was part of his background of consciousness, maybe.
And religion should be based on who you're living with, so I agree with that.
That's real, yeah. It's just accommodationist.
Another high five. Julia earned it.
That one you can hear,
yeah,
too.
That was a good one.
Nice pop.
We connected. All right, Julie, you've got our next song for us. Something from One Foot on the Grave. What do you
want? Oh, yeah, Hollow Log, which is, this, like, might be my favorite Beck album.
Yeah.
One Foot in the Grave. Like, I feel like a lot of Beck fans don't know it, but it's so good. I could listen to the whole thing. I did. Yesterday, I listened to the whole thing.
Go where you want to. Do the things you feel. Walk around with a broken leg and $100 bill. Get yourself a pistol, get yourself a dog. Stay up all night getting drunk, sleeping on a hollow log.
So good.
It's almost a lullaby.
Yeah, it's a great record.
It really is.
He actually had a bowl cut at the time that he recorded that record as well.
You know,
something
I was looking
just
at
to
the
think
cover
about
of that record yesterday, and he looks fantastic.
Yeah, he's got that long, greasy hair you like.
Yeah, it's great. That's right. What I'm saying is everyone should grow that hair like Beck.
Yeah, that guy was like mid-90s, everything I wanted to be in life.
Yeah, me too.
One of the most life-changing television experiences I've ever had, actually. I was probably 14 years old.
Can we go back to that category? One of the most life-changing television experiences I've ever had.
Yeah. I like to qualify things, Julia. Yeah. I'm not a fan of hyperbole. I want to be precise.
I really admire it. Yeah.
So, probably this is, I think the year is 1996. I'm 14 years old. I turn on PBS late on a Saturday night because that's how I rolled.
One does.
I was a weird kid even then. Dave, is that any surprise to you?
No, I'm just surprised you had to turn it on. It wasn't already on. Yeah.
Television, I felt like, was mostly evil, so you would be very, very rare about it. But they used to have this thing called Sessions at West 54th Street. And it was a show where they'd have musicians play live at this New York studio, and Beck performed on it. And I was like waiting for months for this. I saw the performance, and he played a special version of Where It's At that he called Make Out City. And he did this like electric slide dance moves. And I couldn't dance, you know, but that was like the move that I used to imitate every time I went dancing with anyone. We're like, I jumped to the side and slide and clap my hands. I was like, Beck taught me everything I knew about dancing
as
a teenager.
That's amazing.
It was amazing.
What an inspiration.
I've been listening to lots of Radiohead with my daughters lately, Stillman. Yeah. And so I've been showing them videos of Tom York dancing.
Nice.
And I'm really encouraging them all to dance like Tom York.
Yeah.
Just erratic hand movements.
You have to be careful because if they're out in public, people might think they're having seizures.
Oh. You know, this is good. These are like inspirational figures, right? Like Tom York, like Beck. People who objectively have no right to be cool, right? These are like skinny, aging white dudes. But they're awesome.
They're
like, I made this song and I am so cool. And you're like, yes.
Agreed.
Yes.
And here's proof. 1999, Beck releases Midnight Vultures. This album, I was reading about this the other day. It was almost titled. One of the titles that Beck was considering was, I Can Smell the VD in the Club Tonight. Which is...
He's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, this is a song that Beck used to perform at concerts for many years before this. And when this came out on Midnight Vultures, I remember I was a Beck super fan. I was so excited that it had finally been released on an album. And this was a song, Laurel and I danced to this song the first time we really ever met each other. And that's how I knew it was love.
Great.
She knew all the words. I knew all the words. And we had an excited email conversation about it afterwards. And I was like, this is a woman I want to date.
Perfect romance.
It's Deborah. Come on.
I met you at JCPenney. I think your name tag, I said Jenny. I co-stepped to you with a fresh pack of gum, and somehow I knew you were looking for some unknown, like a fruit that's right.
Pretty much a sin for me to fade that song out.
Yeah, it's really tragic.
I thought you were gonna play that song. I didn't know how you could fade that out. That is probably my favorite Beck song. That's just so good.
Laurel's sister's name Jenny too, which makes it so good. Well, that was Midnight Vultures. We've had old Don't Care About Anything anti-folk Beck. We had old like channeling Delta Blues folk Beck. We had Beck making fun of Prince and R&B. And now we're going to have another flavor of Beck. Dave, you got the next song for us.
Yeah, I think this is this serious Beck? This is when Beck just
Bad
really...
Beck.
This is like heartbreak.
Really wants you to feel. He wants you to feel his emotions, sea change. This is probably my favorite Beck record because I like sadness and men alone with their guitars. So my favorite song on that record is Lost Cause.
Sorry eyes that cut through bone, make it hard to leave you alone, leave you here wearing your wounds, waving your guns, somebody new. baby, your love. Baby, your love. Baby, your love comes. There's too many people they used to know. They see you coming, they see you go. They know your secrets, you know this. This town is crazy, nobody cares. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost.
It's like the maybe the most ultimate breakup song, right?
That song reminds me of my first failed marriage. Really, really powerful.
It's like a real, that's a real breakup song.
Yeah. Ugh. Tired of fighting.
I give up, man.
Yeah. It's not one of those vindictive, cruel ones
it's
either.
It's not bitter.
It's like resigned.
It's like, we have
honest.
To be done here.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, though.
Totally.
You got to be a, yeah, there's beauty in this sadness. I think that's what makes sad music so great, is it's just beautiful to hear it.
It feels good when you're crying.
I like sad music, though.
We love sad. That's what the show's about, basically. We pretend to be happy and positive about life, and then we play all our really sad songs and our true feelings come out.
Like, I try to be a happy person, but people are like, what are you listening to? I'm like,
How sad do you want to get?
Something really serious.
Yeah.
Mastiel, my mother-in-law was at our house last night for a minute, and she just finished watching Lonesome Dove, and she said she didn't like it. Basically, her reasoning was it was too sad of an ending. And it just, I almost had to leave the room. Like, I was infuriated. The sadness is what makes it beautiful.
Is Ariane going to ever speak to her again?
No, we asked her not to come back.
Go to your room and think about it.
We'll send you Christmas cards of the triplets, but that's the last time you'll ever meet them. All right.
Then you'll understand. You'll feel sad, too.
Yeah, seriously. All right, Julia, we had a sad reflective Beck, which kind of leads into this.
This is empowering. Gonna get through it, Beck. Yeah, this is a good. I listened to this song when I was in Italy by myself.
Oh, you
a
did?
Lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Go It Alone.
And this is from Wero, which I learned is his highest ever charting album.
Beck don't need the charts.
That blew my mind.
It's crazy.
This is, anyway.
It's a great song.
It is.
By the lane with my hands in my pocket, jingling a wish coin that I stole from finding out what's going on, the cares in the world. When I get older, climbing up on the back porch fence just to see the dogs running with the ring and a question and my silver wind voices singing through a crack.
I better go alone.
Down the corner, see me standing on a makeshift home with the dust. Black shadow, pulled a hammer from a coal mine down where your daddy was smoking. Combed my hair back, stuck a match on the bathroom wall where my number is written. Driving on the sidewalk, looking back to the sky is burning in my rear view.
That sounds like effortless cool. That's a very cool song.
That seems like the kind of song that if you walk down the street with that on your headphones, you just feel cool right then.
You feel good.
Yeah, powerful.
It's
You can be alone in Italy with a weird haircut and just still feel great about your life.
Saran wrap on your head.
And you don't hear the cat calls because you got headphones.
No, that was really real. Yeah. Black it out.
Wow. So we've covered, I guess, 12 years of Beck right there. We're going to take a big leap in time from 2005. I wanted to pick a single song that I think represents what Beck's been up to the last couple of years. He released a bunch of stuff around the time of his Morning Phase record that was very different. There's a song called Blue Randy that was the single. And the A-side of that single was recorded with Jack White. It's called I Just Started Hating Some People Today.
Now just starting to see the light of day. Some people say one thing but act the other way. Sooner or later, they give themselves away. And I just started to see the light of day. Started hating some people today. And I just started wanting to kill someone. And I don't need a nunchuck of a gun. One look in my eye and you will run. And I just started wanting to kill someone.
That seems like that would have fit perfectly on Morning Phase. I wonder why it wasn't included.
Or Sea Change. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
I love that, saying things a garbage man wouldn't say.
Such a great lyric.
It's great. You know, I listen to a lot of Outkast. I'm a big Outkast fan. And they say several times, it's like their thing, cooler than a polar bear's toenails. Just like amazing. And I feel like that garbage man thing for me is equivalent.
Cooler than a polar bear's toenail.
They say it like 3 or 4 times. And I'm like, yeah, just that cool. Just like a garbage man.
Well, listeners, that's only a taste of Beck. We didn't even cover any of Beck's like rap efforts.
I know. Beck can do everything. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, it really is.
Don't worry. We can do a whole episode of Beck, hip hop Beck as well. Still,
we didn't do any Beck flute music either. So sorry for your Jethro Tull fans out there.
Wait, still, are you aware that Beck won a Grammy? Do you know that happened?
Yeah, wasn't it? It was for like
a Morning Phase.
It was for Morning Phase, and then Kanye got upset because Beyonce should have won, right?
Blah blah.
Yeah, I want to know what is your thoughts on Kanye. And Beck, yeah, how are you feeling about that?
I really liked it. I mean, Beck has a good publicist, I suppose, because his response was, Kanye's a really talented artist. I think he's great, right afterwards. It was kind of magnanimous. It was not about, Like, do I think Beck cares about the Grammy? Not a ton.
No.
If he did, it would be like a betrayal of everything he's about.
Yes.
Like, I remember still very clearly, it was the MTV Music Awards. He performed Deborah and was like dry humping the ground. It was like tongue in cheek mocking everything that they were about. Took his jacket off. And then afterwards, like, Puff Daddy comes up to the microphone and like doesn't know what to say. I think he was like embarrassed and like, it was amazing. And it was like, I loved watching that clip because I was like, yes, this is Beck's attitudes towards award shows.
Yeah. And, like, I think public Kanye is a little hard to stomach in some ways at this point, but I've been listening to his first record, and it makes me excuse everything about him. I'm like, okay, Kanye is, like, blah, blah. You're, like, picking the same fight about the award show, and we know it sucks. But also, you wrote this album, and it's really good. So I'm glad that's, like, a nice... I didn't even really know that or like know about Beck's response, but like he should have just been like, Kanye released the College Dropout,
pretty much.
It's great.
And he was like, so, I'd love to work with Kanye one day. It kind of was how he, you know, like,
oh my god, the best Beck response.
And so the takeaway is, if you've at least produced one good piece of art the rest of your life and personality doesn't matter, is that what
that's
we're saying?
Fair. Yeah,
okay, well, I accept that as well.
Yeah.
Depends on it. Doesn't matter to whom. Doesn't matter to whom, but...
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, so there's our Unchained Melodies. We're going to wrap up this episode. Time has flown. It's almost been an hour already on this episode. So let's hear some incredible book wisdom. Julia, do us the honor. What do you have for us today?
I'm going to read some Benito Sereno. Oh, no, I'm not. This book has Benito Sereno in it. That's way too intense. I'm going to read some Bartleby.
All right, give us a bit of... Who's Bartleby, and what's he about?
Okay, Bartleby is the Scrivener. He is the passively resistant, totally opaque figure of critique in mid-19th century American literature. So he's Melville's most passive but most effective figure in this story, Bartleby the Scrivener. Is that fair?
Perfect. I just want to get out there. We're talking about Herman Melville, not one of the other Melvilles.
Yeah.
We gotta Herman
Melville, who is cooler than a polar bear's toenail and says things the garbage man wouldn't say.
It's true.
So this is the very end of this story about this guy who can't find a way to live because it's really hard. And the narrator says at the end, there would seem little need for procuring further in this history. Imagination will readily supply the meager recital of poor Bartleby's interment. He died. But ere parting with the reader, let me say that if this little narrative has sufficiently interested him to awaken curiosity as to who Bartleby was and what manner of life he led prior to the present narrator's making his acquaintance, I can only reply that in such curiosity I fully share, but am wholly unable to gratify it. Yet here I hardly know whether I should divulge one little item of rumor which came to my ear a few months after the Scrivener's decease. Upon what basis it rested, I could never ascertain, and how true it is, I cannot now tell. But inasmuch as this vague report has not been without a certain suggestive interest to me, however sad, it may prove the same with some others, and so I will briefly mention it. The report was this, that Bartleby had been a subordinate clerk in the dead letter office at Washington, from which he had been suddenly removed by a change in the administration. When I think over this rumor, hardly can I express the emotions that seize me. Dead letters, does it not sound like dead men? Conceive a man by nature and misfortune prone to a pallid hopelessness. Can any business seem more fitted to heighten it than that of continually handling these dead letters and assorting them for the flames? For by the cartload they are annually burned. Sometimes from out the folded paper, the pale clerk takes a ring. The finger it was meant for perhaps molders in the grave. A banknote sent in swiftest charity. He whom it would relieve nor eats nor hungers anymore. pardon for those who died despairing, hope for those who died unhoping, good tidings for those who died stifled by unrelieved calamities. On errands of life, these letters speed to death. Ah, Bartleby. Ah, humanity. A very cheerful...
Yeah, thanks for not...
Beck-like...
Thanks for not getting heavy with Benito Cereno.
One foot in the grave, man. 1 foot in the grave.
That's more like both feet in the grave there.
Both feet in all letters.
Yeah.
Totally in the grave.
Such a great story. I had forgotten the ending. I forgot that he relates this rumor at the end that just blows you
away.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought about just saying I would prefer not to over and over and over and over again.
That's your passage. Here's some book wisdom. I would prefer not to. Bartleby the later said, I prefer not to.
But, you know, I thought death instead.
Thank you. You know, I was talking with Dave. This is my morbid personality. This is why we're such good friends, I suppose. Outwardly optimistic people who reflect on death frequently.
We were just like, life sucks.
And Laurel and I were discussing this, and she said, why don't you do a This Week in Death segment on this show? But I haven't been able to get it past death.
Oh, my God. I saw you did a death and dying episode. You should have read Bartleby that, man.
I know. Yeah, Dave, how was that episode? Did you like that one?
Yeah, anytime we can talk about death or something that brings everybody down, still, I know that it makes you happy and it makes you feel fulfilled. So I'm all in.
You're
I love
good
when
friends.
We can bring Bartleby out. Yeah.
But I thought Melville wrote like this really long epic poem that like 10 people have read.
Yeah. Well, I actually think I think it was a bit more popular than it gets credit for. I haven't read it.
Okay, me neither. Well,
fascinating account of our non-reading.
Well, that was
thanks,
a great
guys.
Episode.
Yeah.
It's great to talk to you, Julie.
You too.
But guys, just so you know, in the comic masterpiece Bone, there's an adorable character named Bartleby that's a baby rat creature. He's just an adorable little fuzzy purple guy. So anytime I hear Bartleby, it's usually from a toddler girl, and it's much cuter than what you just read.
Wow. They're going to grow into some real, like, macabre
heavy
mid-century
stuff.
Literature. Yeah.